Okay. L'chaim, l'chaim, ul'tiferet Medinat Yisrael. We're at the bottom of Lamed Beis, Amud Beis.
Are you going to put up the daf?
Sure. Here you go.
Thanks.
The Mishnah at the bottom of Lamed Beis, Amud Beis. Hold on, I got Oh, David.
Yes.
You sent me at the end of last week's Shiur an article by Meir Bar Ilan about the previous Mishnah, which was very interesting. It was very long, but it was very interesting.
I was particularly, you were interested about the idea of like, what was the Gzirat Malchut, so I thought that would be helpful, but in general,
he rejects the idea that we're talking about a historical case. He finds it implausible. I mean, he has no evidence one way or another, but he finds it implausible. He also rejects the idea that, if you have the link to the article, you can put it in the chat box to everyone. He also rejects the idea that Tkiyat Shofar ever was part of Shacharit. And his arguments are obviously plausible and clear, but it goes against the reading of the Gemara. David, did you hide underneath your desk?
No, I'm just, my shoe came untied for some reason.
Oh, I see. Wow. That's Kol HaKavod. You're the only person in quarantine who's still wearing shoes.
I've been in quarantine. I mean, you know, I work from every day, so if I don't,
Yeah, but they don't look at your shoes.
A little bit, then...
Yeah, but you could wear Crocs. I have worn through a whole pair of slippers, like down to the fibers. I had to throw them out. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah. Here. Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, Ein ma'avirin alav et ha-tchum, ve'ein mefakchim alav et ha-gal, ve'lo olin bi'ilan, ve'lo rochvin agabe behema, ve'lo shatim al pnei ha-mayim, ve'ein chotchin oto, ve'ein bedavar shu mishum shvud, ve'ein bedavar shu mishum lo ta'ase. Nikuda.
Yeah, you can scroll down on your own page.
No, it's here. You see it? Okay, to the bottom, few lines of Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis. So the Gemara says that even though shofar is a mitzvah taseh, nevertheless, you're not allowed to violate a catalog of prohibitions in order to fulfill the tkiat shofar. And what's on this list? Number one, you can't violate Tchum Shabbat. You can't go outside of Alpayim Amot. That's Diraita or Dirabanan?
Yes,
is Dirabanan. V'ein mefakhin alav et agal. If there was a kind of building collapse, right? So you're obviously allowed to clear away a building collapse in order to save lives, but if it's merely to get the shofar that was buried underneath the rubble, you're not allowed to do that.
On Shabbat.
On Shabbat or on Yom Tov. In other words, on Rosh Hashanah itself.
Right?
In other words, if it's not Rosh Hashanah, so then there's no reason to. In other words, if it's the Shabbat, if it's the Shabbat before Rosh Hashanah, there's no reason to do it because you can't say what's the Havamina? What might we say minus this Mishnah? Absent this Mishnah, what might we say?
That you can, that the mitzvah to say of Tkiyat Shofar is Doche the Rabbanan of Om Shabbat.
Right. Or in halachic language, Ase Doche Lotase. And certainly...
Shabbat, but in Shabbat Mimela, you don't have the...
Right, so in other words, we're obviously talking about doing these things on Rosh Hashanah. You wake up on Rosh Hashanah...
When Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbat, you don't even blow shofar, so why would there be even a Havamina that you would...
We're talking about Rosh Hashanah.
No. Ain't Mavrim, the Tchum is talking about Shabbat.
Also,
yeah. There's Tchum also for Shabbat.
Also Chag.
Right, that's what I meant. There's also Tchum for Yom Tov.
Right.
Steintel says he's specifically talking about Tchum Shabbat. Does Tchum Shabbat apply all? Is the concept
Tchum,
of Tchum Shabbat?
Tchum Shabbat is the nickname for that halacha. Right, but Tchum Shabbat applies equally on Yom Tov. Shofar Shavu Shoshana ain't mavim alav et tchum, ve'ein mefachin alav et agal. There's obviously if it's Parsha Zohar, which is 6 months away from Rosh Hashanah, and your shofar is underneath a pile of rubble, there's no havamina that you needed today. But if it happens to be you wake up on Rosh Hashanah morning and you realize the only shofar that you got is underneath that pile of rubble, so the question is, can I violate Shabbat Derabanan by clearing away this pile of rubble in order to get the one shofar that would allow me to be mekayim the mitzvah? Velo olin be'ilan, right? You know, there's a gzera derabanan against climbing trees or riding on animals, right. These three things about swimming and climbing trees and riding on animals. They were apparently like a trinity of isurei derabanan to protect Shabbat and Yom Tov. Ve'ein chotchin oto bein bedavar, and you can't cut the shofar. It doesn't mean necessarily to sever it from the head of the animal, right? But in other words, if you have the raw shofar and you want to prepare it, it requires being cut. So you can't cut the shofar whether you're doing it with a shvut. A shvut means a dirabanan. Uvein bedarashu mishum lo tase, or something which is specifically in isur one of the malachot. The Gemara will describe what the different possibilities are. Aval im ratzel yiten l'tocho mayim o yayin yiten. But if you have a shofar and you want to put water or wine into it, which was a custom that some balei tokea have in order to condition the shofar. In order to condition the shofar, that is allowed. Rashi says, you see Rashi here? Where's the Rashi? Hold on, I have to move up to get the Rashi. Im ratzalitein letocho mayim, velo amrinan ka mitaken mana. We don't say that is metaken mana. Metaken mana is make bepatish. Right? And we don't say that by putting water into the shofar. If you put water into the shofar before you blow it, it would somehow make the sound more clear, or it might make it easier to blow. So we don't say that that's a malacha of makeba patish, making it usable. Because it was usable before. Now it's just a little easier to blow, or it's going to blow nicer, or it's going to blow with a more clear note. So if you want to put in water or wine, that you are allowed to do. V'ein ma'akvin et atinokot militkoa. And you don't have to prevent children from blowing the shofar. The Gemara will discuss exactly what the circumstance is. Aval mitaskini mahem ad shilamdu. But you can be involved. This very significant word mitasek, which is not a mere word, it's a kind of a halachic category. To be mitasek means to be preoccupied, right? To do something, even though you're not, like intending to do it for the mitzvah purpose, right? In other words, mitasek becomes the word which is, like the definition of doing an act without kavanat hamitzvah. So you can be mitasek with the kids to blow the shofar ad shiilmadu, right? Until they learn how to blow the shofar. Right? And as we would say, you shouldn't blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah except for the actual blowing of the shofar. But you can practice the blowing of the shofar with children so that they'll learn how to do it.
What's the havamina that you...
The Gemara will discuss the exact case. V'hamitasek lo yatsa. But if you are merely blowing the shofar, you're not yotze because you're not intending to do the mitzvah. V'hashomea min ha-mitasek lo yatza. And somebody who hears the shofar from someone who's only being mitasek, similarly is not yotze. The obvious question is, if the person blowing isn't yotze, so then certainly the person who hears him isn't yotze. What's the havamina?
I'm wondering if some of these issues are going to be relevant this year. We're not out of the woods yet. By Rosh Hashanah, there's going to be a lot more need to deal with all kinds of ways you hear. Are you in the same room? I don't know. The people are going to be doing all kinds of, might have to do all kinds of things for shofar.
Oh yeah, I hope by Rosh Hashanah this will not be the case.
Not a lot of reason to believe that. I mean, I don't think it's likely we're going to be able to be in large gatherings of hundreds of people together by then.
You might be have somebody stand in front of each building. And if we can have minyanim of 19 people, and if you can have a merpeset minyanim of theoretically hundreds of people as long as they're socially distant, so you can have somebody standing on a street blowing shofar, and that's not even the case in the Gemara, which we'll see, of over me'achure beit ha-kneset, right? In other words, over me'achure beit ha-kneset, you're like walking down the street and you hear somebody blowing the shofar. So here, you know they're blowing the shofar for you, and you know that they're blowing the shofar, and they know they're blowing the shofar for you. I don't know, but I hope by Rosh Hashanah this is not the case. Anyway, I wanted to take a look at this. It's interesting. And since we have the technology, we can look at it. You see?
אולם גם יצור השופר דורש מיומנות מיוחדת. כאשר חותכים את הקרן מבעל החי, העצם עדיין דבוקה לשופר. כדי להפריד את העצם, מניחים לקרן להתייבש, ואז בכמה מכות פטיש חזקות, העצם יוצאת החוצה. גם מקרן ארוכה ומפותלת של הרעם או אנטילופה, העצם מתגלשת החוצה. חשוב לציין שהרעם אינו אותו רעם המוזכר בתורה, שהוא פסול לשופר. לאחר שהוצאנו את העצם הפנימית, עדיין לא ניתן לתקוע בשופר, מפני שהקצה של השופר סתום. העצם לא מגיעה עד סוף הקרן. היא נמצאת רק בחלק הקרוב לראש. בעיה נוספת ישנה, שהקרן עדיין גולם, עליה נמצאים שכבות שצריך לקרצפם. ואם ניקח לדוגמה קרן של ראם, שאורכה מגיע לכמטר ו-30, כאשר פותחים אותה מבעל החי, משקלה הוא כ-9 קילוגרם. לאחר הוצאת העצם, משקלה מגיע ל-6 קילוגרם. ולאחר השיוף וגמר העבודה, משקלה מגיע לכ-700 גרם בלבד. בתחילה מורידים את השכבה הגסה הנמצאת על גבי השופר. וכך, שלב אחר שלב, משייפים ומקלפים את השופר על מנת שיהיה ראוי לתקיעה של מצווה. אנחנו לא מברכים ברכת שהחיינו בשעת עשיית השופר, כמו במצוות אחרות שיש בהן חיוב לברך. והסיבה לכך, כתבו הראשונים, א', מפני שבעשיית שופר יש טרחה מרובה ואין מלאכה זו מרחיבה את דעתו של האדם. בית, את השופר מייצרים אחת לכמה שנים, ולא כמו לולב או סוכה. ג', לא כתוב בתורה שיש מצווה מיוחדת בעשיית השופר, כמו שכתוב, חג הסוכות תעשה לך. וכעת אנו מגיעים לשלב העדין ביותר בתהליך עשיית השופר. קידוח הפומית של השופר. כל סטייה לא נכונה עלולה לפסול את השופר. ובכדי להתגבר על הבעיה, דבר ראשון, מיישרים את החלק הצר של השופר כדי שהמקדחה הישרה תחדור פנימה ולא תפגע בדפנות השופר. איך מיישרים שופר קשיח? פשוט מאוד. מחממים אותו על גבי האש, וכאשר הוא מתחמם ומתרכך קצת, מכניסים אותו תחת לחץ על מנת ליישרו. כיום, בשיטות המודרניות, משתמשים בלחץ אוויר. פעם ועוד פעם עד שראש השופר מתיישר. ואז בעדינות בעדינות עד לתוצאה הנפלאה. גם בתוך הפומית הקידוח נעשה בצורה מסוימת כדי להקל על התקיעה. בעל מפעל היה מוכן לשתף אותנו בסוד המקצועי שלו. הוא מספר שהוא פתח חצוצרות על מנת ללמוד מהם כיצד לבצע את זוויות הקידוח בתוך השופר כדי שהקול הבוקע יישמע צלול וחודר. אריה שאג, מי לא יירא. לאחר מכן השופר עובר שיוף אחרון להחליק אותו מכל הכיוונים, כמאמר הגמרא, זה כלי ואנבהו, עשה לך שופר נאה. וכעת נזכור בקצרה את סוגי השופרות לפי המנהגים המקובלים בעדות השונות.
Okay. That was interesting.
And it felt like sixth grade where the teacher would show you like a film strip or something. You get a little break.
I hope you weren't passing notes in class, David.
Not then, no.
Anyway, the Gemara says, it's one of these Gemaras that has like a lot of very short pieces to it. So my Taima, the Gemara asks, why, in other words, generally speaking, we have a principle called ase docha lo tase, that a positive mitzvah overrides a negative mitzvah. And if you're caught in this kind of halachic triage where you have no choice but to do one or the other, so the mitzvah tase is doche the mitzvah lo tase. So, for example, the classic example, of course, is Brit Milah on Shabbat. Normally speaking, you're not allowed to make, things that are done for Pikuach Nefesh, of course. Generally speaking, you're not allowed to make cuts and incisions on Shabbat. But there's a mitzvah taseh that says you must do Brit Milah on the eighth day. So that's doche, even when the Brit Milah, the eighth day, comes out on Shabbat. And certainly for an Isser in the Torah, Kal Vachomer for a mere Isser de Rabbanan. So the Gemara asks, my Taima, what's the reason that you can't do all of these isurim, most of which happen to be derabanan, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar on Rosh Hashanah? So my taima, shofar asay, vehu yom tov asay, velo tase. Because shofar is a mitzvah asay, but Yom Tov is a mitzvah aseh and a mitzvah lo taseh together. What's the aseh and the lo taseh?
The aseh is to get shofar.
No. In other words, on one hand you have shofar, which is a mitzvah aseh. On the other hand, you have both an aseh and a lo taseh. What's the aseh? Well, the aseh is b'chodesh ha-shvi b'echad b'chodesh yelechem shabbaton. There's a positive mitzvah to have a day refrained from labor on Rosh Hashanah. And the lo taseh is kol melechet avado lo ta'asu. So when it's an aseh versus a lo taseh, so then you can say aseh docha lo taseh, that the mitzvah aseh overrides the prohibition. But when you have on one hand an aseh, and on the other hand you have both an aseh and a lo taseh, so then it doesn't override. The obvious question should be what?
Is the Shabbat the same?
Shabbat is the same. right? Which is why you need a special limud of Uviyom HaShmini to teach you that Brit Milah is an exception. Ve'en ase doche et lo tase va'ase. So lo olin be'ilan ve'lo rochvin agabe behema v'chule. Hashta dirabanan amarta. Lo diraita mi boile. Now there's, wait a second. What does the Mishnah need to give me the whole catalog? The Mishnah gives me things that are isurei derabanan. And then at the end it tells me, even in terms of the cutting of the horn, even something which is dioraisa, you're not allowed to do. So the Gemara asks, what do you need that for? In other words, just tell me you're not allowed to violate a derabanan in order to get a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. What would I learn from that?
That obviously you're not, you can't do
it later,
but
you can't do it. Yeah. Barur. Right? Ve'en sarich lomar zu katani. Right? Ve'en sarich lomar zu katani. So the Gemara says it's a kind of Talmudic phrase. That's what the Mishnah is really saying is, you're not allowed to do X, which is dirabanan, and it goes without saying that you're not allowed to do Y, which is dioraita. But enachinami, the Gemara shouldn't need to spell out the dioraita, because that's implicit if we don't allow you to even do a dirabanan. So the Gemara says enachinami. That's true, but it's just a kind of rhetorical turn. You know, like when I tell you, it should go without saying, right? So, what's strange about that?
Because you're about to say it anyway.
Yeah, because you're about to say it anyway, right? So the Gemara says Enochinami. It's true. The Gemara shouldn't need to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. Rashi makes a point in the catalog. There are two different types of isurei derabanan. You know, there's certain things that Chazal made usur on Shabbos and Yom Tov for whatever reason, because they felt that these things were inherently against the spirit of the day, like clearing away a pile of rubble. Clearing away a pile of rubble is not a malacha. And neither is Trum Shabbat. Trum Shabbat is not a malacha, and Trum Shabbat was not instituted to prevent you from doing a malacha. According to most opinions, even muktza was not instituted to prevent you from doing malacha. Perhaps only muktza machmat isur, like a pen or a pencil or usur, lest you'll come to write with it. But other things, other categories, the Rambam lists three different reasons for muktza. It doesn't seem that muktza was instituted in order to prevent you from coming to do malacha. It was instituted to preserve the spirit of Shabbat.
Muktze machmas miyus.
Muktze machmas miyus, muktze machmas gufo, muktze machmas chisaron kis, all the categories of muktze, and perhaps even muktze machmas iser. When we tell you you can't move a pencil, is it because we're really afraid you're going to come to write with it? Or is it because we don't want you dealing with these weekday type things? I mentioned I was teaching yesterday and I reached for a pen. You know, I always have in my breast pocket, I always have a pen. But these days, you know, in the house, I mean, I just said to David, I hardly ever put on shoes. I wear slippers or Crocs. I haven't worn a wristwatch in 6 weeks. because I don't leave the house, and there's a clock every place, and it's on my phone, and it's right, so I don't need a watch, and I don't put my pen on. I don't put my pen in my pocket in the morning when I get it's an accomplishment just to put on pants and a shirt, right? But I don't gird myself for the day I haven't put my wallet, you know, on the rare occasion I think I've gone out to the store three times, you know, I put my wallet in my pants, but I don't normally even put my wallet and my keys, you know, into my pockets when I get up in the morning, because who needs it? So the Rambam says the reason for muktzeh is it's not necessarily to prevent you. It's not a gader, a fence around preventing you from malacha, right? It's to create a distinct feeling for Shabbat, right? And Horaya, there are times, the most lenient of all of the categories of muktzeh is muktzeh machmat isur. We allow you to transform the pencil into a back scratcher, right? Or a toothpick, or chopsticks, right? Right. If you are eating something that you need chopsticks for, you're allowed to use them as chopsticks. Or in the classic case, you're allowed to use a hammer to crack nuts. Now, why is that? Because the principal use of a hammer is to bang nails. And since nail banging is something you're not allowed to do on Shabbat, the hammer loses its purpose. However, hidden in every hammer, the principal use being nail cracking, hidden in every hammer is also a secondary use as a nutcracker. So if you want to activate the nutcracker that's hiding inside the hammer, go ahead and crack the nuts, and it's not muktzah as long as you're using it as a nutcracker. So you see that muktzah isn't principally about preventing you from doing malacha, because if that were the case, wouldn't we be nervous that while you had the hammer in your hand, you would then whack a nail? Or if you had the pencil scratching your back, you would, you know, by accident write something down? No, apparently not. We Chazal weren't afraid of that. So there are certain isurim that are there just for the kind of, let's say, spirit of Shabbat and Yom Tov, Tchum Shabbat, and clearing away rubble, which is such an inherently, like, a person could say, look, I have a stone wall in my backyard that fell down. You know, like all the projects that you've been, like I said, we have, my machsan is a mess. When we moved into the house, there was all this stuff that came on a lift from America that went into the machsan, and it's been sitting there for 20 years now we're in the house. And I always said I would clean it out, but, you know, we never have time. We never have Sundays. I never have an occasion to be at home with nothing to do. And if I only had a month of Sundays, I would clean out the machsan. Apparently, that was not the real reason preventing me from cleaning out the machsan, because I've been home for 6 weeks and I haven't done it yet. I lost track of, what was I saying?
Wasn't the reason why you didn't do it.
No. But no, so in other words, so on Shabbat, I have a stone wall, you know, like something out of a Robert Frost poem in the backyard. And the wall collapses. So I say, well, I have to rebuild it. Is it also to do on Shabbat? Maybe not. Right? Maybe not. Right? It's not bnia. It's not, the stones themselves are not even muktzah, because they've been prepared for use as, you know, this kind of wall. So I can say, well, I'll go out on Shabbat. Shabbat, I have free time. I'll go out and I'll clear off the stones and I'll pile them up, and then I'll rebuild the wall.
Why wouldn't that be bonded?
Because it's not, because piling one stone on top of another stone, you're not using mortar and cement. You know, this is just a, you're a New Englander. You know what these Robert Frost, flinty stone type things look like. Piling one stone on top of another is not bone. As you can say, and what'll happen, you'll spend your whole Shabbat, you know, doing hard labor, which is not technically malacha. Because not, as you know, not all melachot are hard labor. See? That wasn't very hard, but it's a melacha. And not all hard labor is melacha. So Chazal said, this is not something we want you doing. If there's a human being trapped underneath that gal shel avanim bavakasha. But if it's not, even if it's your shofar that you have to get to, you're not allowed to do it. And then there are other things that Chazal instituted, like the swimming and the horseback riding and the climbing of trees, where the fear is it will lead to Isser. So there are different types of prohibitions. Okay, so now the Gemara said, so now Lamed Gimel Omer Aleph. Ve'en chotchin oto bein bedavar shuhu mishum shvut uvein bedavar shuhu mishum lo tase. And you can't cut, like we saw in the video, you can't cut the shofar either to slice off one side or slice off the other. Either something that is merely shvut again is a category of Yisurei Derabanan. Uvein bedavar shuhu mishum lo tase. Lo tase would be a real isur. So you see, Rashi says velo chotchin oto imba letakno lo bedavar shuhu mishum shvut kli she'ein darko lachtoch bo shofrot kegon magla sharfabalas the tikun kalaachar yadhu. So Rashi says, Mishum Shvut, what's the case of Mishum Shvut? What would be a way of cutting the shofar that's only Asur de Rabbanan? A magla. Magla is a sickle. You know what a sickle looks like? Remember the hammer and sickle? So why would cutting a shofar with a sickle only be Asur de Rabbanan?
Because it's not the usual way of doing it.
It's low kedarko. Whenever you do a malacha in an unusual way, you take something which is used for, you know, cutting down for harvesting the wheat, right? And you use it, you know, it's like bringing a nuclear bomb to a knife fight, right? And you're trying to cut something small and precise, and you're using a machete for it, right? So since you're doing it in the unusual way, so it's not asur d'oraita, it's asur rak d'rabanan. So what would be a case velo tase? What would be a case of doing it in a way that is really asur d'oraita? If you use a knife, right? So then you would be violating. So the Mishnah says you can't cut the shofar not like this, not like that. You can't cut the shofar in a way which is asur d'rabanan, and you can't cut the shofar in a way that's asur d'oraita. Like we saw in the movie. In the movie they use that drill. It makes you wonder. First of all, what was the interesting thing in that little film clip? Number one,
how many sort of modern tools were used?
Right. So they're using. I mean, it's not high tech, but it's they're using power tools to sand it down and to drill the hole. And one wonders, like, the amount of labor it must have gone in to make a shofar in the pre-industrial era must have taken many, 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 many tens of hours more than it does today. Like, from the video, it looks like you can make a whole shofar, you know, in less than a day. But in the days before, the amount of sanding down time and cutting with a hacksaw or whatever it would be to, not a hacksaw, a jigsaw, right? To cut down the mouth. And then the amount of time, whatever kind of hand bore they would use to cut through the mouthpiece right? Which like he said, it has to be, first you have to flatten, you have to straighten out. You have to, here you can see, this part of the shofar has to be made straight. This is not what it looks like when it's on the head of the animal. It's not, it has to be made straight, right? Because to make it straight, so that you can, so that they can put the, they can put the drill bit straight through, right? Because if they had to do it on a curve, there's no tool that they could have possibly used that would have been able to make that cut without breaking through on the side. But even with the power tools that they're using, they say it has to be done extremely precisely, because if you, if you're off by just a millimeter, if it's not going in at this, at the straight angle, it's gonna come out and pierce the side. So, so one wonders like how many hours it would have taken and what tools were used in the pre-industrial era. The other interesting thing is to see the bone. When they cut the thing off the animal's head, it still has the bone inside, right? That's the Gemara that we learned much earlier when we started learning Rosh Hashanah. That's why it's called shofar. It's called a shofaret because it's hollow. But inside, there was the bone. And that's that piece that they pull out. I don't know what they do with it, but... okay. So hashta mishum shvut amart lo lo ta'ase miboya zu ve'en sarich lo mar zu katani. So it's the same question. So okay, if I tell you you're not allowed to cut the shofar with something that's asur derabanan, you could imply that kal v'chomer you're not allowed to do anything that's a, that's an isur diraita. So the Gemara says, enochinami, but that's the way it said it, right? In other words, I'll tell you this, and I don't even need to tell you that, but it means that I have told you. There is a different nusach of the Gemara. There is another nusach in the Gemara that reverses the cases, that makes the magla, the sickle, the thing which is asur diraita, and suggests that that a knife is only derabanan. And, in other words, our version of the Gemara that the sickle is deraita, is derabanan, is because, as Tzvi said, because it's not the normal derech, it's not the normal way of doing things, so that's why it's only asur derabanan. But the other opinion, the other reading of the Gemara, which is, I think, the way the Rashba has in the Gemara, says, no, the opposite. A sickle is inherent, and as a knife, the use of a knife is not inherently usur. I mean, we use knives all the time on in the kitchen and other things, right? So using a knife for the shofar on Rosh Hashanah would only be usur derabanan. But a sickle, even though normally it's true, I mean, probably the shofar makers don't utilize that tool, but a sickle is inherently usur to use. A knife isn't even like a knife isn't muktza machmas isur, but we allow you to use it according to need, right? A knife is inherently not muktza because it has use on Shabbat in the preparation of food and cooking and other things, but a sickle is by definition muktza because its sole purpose is the reaping and harvesting of wheat, which you can't do on Shabbat and Yom Tov. So there's a different girsa of the Gemara that reverses the two cases. The Mishnah then said that if you wanted to put water, mayim o yayin in meiraglayim lo. Right? If you wanted to put, I'm sorry, wait a second, I skipped. About im ratzali tein otocho mayim o yayin itein. The Mishnah had said if you want to put water or wine into the shofar in order to soften it up, in order to make it a little easier to blow, you're allowed to do that. And then the Gemara says, mayim o yayin in, if you want to use water or wine, bevakasha, meraglayim low, but you are not allowed to use urine.
Now, the resurrection here and elsewhere, where Mary Bilanim is, is disqualified.
Who would have the hafamina to put Mera? So apparently, there is a hafamina to use Meraglayim, because Meraglayim, of course, being a euphemism for urine, has certain properties that are beneficial. It's very acidic. You know, that's why, like, you know, on camping trips when you were a Boy Scout, if you got a burn or something, I remember being in the Boy Scouts as a kid, and you learn, you know, the first aid, you know, bashetach. So in a pinch, if you have a bad burn,
and you have some urine handy, you can use the urine.
And of course we know from Pita Maktoret, Vahalo Mei Raglayim Yofin Lo, right? In theory, Mei Raglayim could have been an ingredient in the Ketoret, but we don't do it because it's not Mechubad. You can't bring it into the Mikdash because it's not Mechubad. But from a purely chemical point of view, it would do the trick. So apparently the acidity of the urine would be very good for whatever one needs to do to make the shofar more receptive to the voice. Now, the idea of putting your lips to it is makes it a little unappealing for the Baal Tokeya. But so that's, by the way, apparently in some of the Rishonim discuss using vinegar, right? Putting vinegar in, because vinegar is similarly acidic, and it does the same. It does the same trick of softening and clearing the shofar.
Kaya, who would do that? He would soak his shofar in vinegar for a period of time during Elul.
Who would do that? Who would do that?
About Tokay and the shul when I was a kid.
So exactly, but that's because and for the same reason that theoretically urine would have done the trick. So the Gemara says you can use wine and water, but you can't use urine. Matnitinami. So who? Matnitinami. Who is the author of our Mishnah that said you can use water and wine? Abba Shaul. He. It must be. This must be according to the opinion of Abba Shaul. The Tanya Abba Shaul Omer Mayim Oyayin Mutar. Abba Shaul said that you're allowed to put in water or wine because it makes the sound tzichtzuch. It makes the sound of the shofar more crystal clear. But me raglayim asur mipnei hakavod. But you can't use urine because it's not proper. It's not respectful.
These are at all times, not just on Yom Tov.
Yeah. So that last halacha is not specifically on Rosh Hashanah, right? That would apply even in the days before leading up to Rosh Hashanah, right? It's not a matter of, like a malacha, right? That halacha is true. You're not allowed to put urine in your, things he thought you'd never say. You're not allowed to put urine in your shofar, even in advance of Rosh Hashanah, because it's not mechubad to the shofar. Obviously, there's no chashash of milacha on the days preceding Rosh Hashanah, but you're allowed to do it even on Rosh Hashanah itself. I might have thought that putting water or wine is somehow makeh bepatish. It's metaken mana, right? It's doing something which is right. This is metaken mana is a dirabanan that's connected to. Makeh Bepatish, right? You know, like all of these things that you're not allowed to do to prepare something, and then all of the things you're not allowed to do, lest it will come to break, and then you will repair it, Right? So putting water or wine into the shofar is not called repairing the shofar in a way which would be usur. So that you're allowed to do even on Rosh Hashanah itself.
No, because it's not an essential thing that you have to do in order to.
Yeah, right, because it's not. Okay. Well, now the Gemara goes on to discuss this question of I'm going to pause here. We'll pause here. We'll have a short shiur tonight. The question of the katan, but that's where we'll pick up next week. Ein makvin et tinok
mitzvah. What are we doing next week?
Next week is Tuesday, regular, right?
Yeah, Tuesday.
It's a regular Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So next week. Anyone's
taking off for Cinco de Mayo? Then we're okay.
Anyone taking off for Cinco de Mayo? So then it'll be Tuesday. We can bring, if you want, you can bring some chili and nachos and tequila instead of the normal whiskey. And that's how we'll celebrate.
Okay, thank you very much,
Goya. Vakasha. Stay healthy. Good.